We are Natalie and Matthias. We welcome you to our conversations with B2B ecosystem experts and platform founders. Our goal is to uncover what they learned and help you to launch and scale platforms, marketplaces, and business ecosystems. Enjoy! I'm more than happy to welcome my co-host Natalie Dumont-Lamborghini. Natalie is our partner and ambassador of the Platform Innovation Kit in France, named Top 10 Most Influential Women in Digital Disruption in 2020 by Analytics Insights, independent board member, startup coach, and investor. And last but not least, CEO and founder of Flying Reno, where she is paving the way for companies wanting to harness the power of platform business models to drive growth, competitiveness, and value increase. A pleasure to start this exciting journey together with you, Natalie.
Thanks, Matthias. I'm also very pleased. We are at the beginning of this great trend and adventure towards the ecosystem economy. So we've got loads to learn and experiment. And of course, who best to share their learnings than those who have actually successfully implementing platforms already. So it's very exciting.
Yes, me too. I'm again, really pleased to have you and co-hosting this show and this podcast together with you. And I'm also looking really forward to talk to all those experts and entrepreneurs and learn more about their success stories. And let's go into our first conversation today. In today's episode, we welcome Lars Schade. He is managing director of the Mercateo Group. And Mercateo is Europe's leading B2B procurement platform and founded 20 years ago in the year of 2000 in Germany. So I'm really proud of that. So headquartered in Munich. Currently, they have about 500 employees, offices in 14 countries in Europe, and finished the year of 2019 with a revenue about 320 million. Talking about the platform itself, I looked up the latest numbers yesterday and they stated they have about 24 million products listed on the marketplace. They have currently about 1.5 million buyers using this marketplace and about 16,000 sellers and with over 3,000 new customers today. So welcome, Lars, and happy to have you in our podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we go into the details about your success stories and learn more about Mercateo, maybe you can give a quick intro about yourself. What is your job, your role, your responsibility?
Yeah.
When do you join Mercateo? So give the people a little bit more about your personal story and the personal link to Mercateo.
Yes, my name is Lars and I joined Mercateo 20 years ago, or almost right from the beginning. It was founded at the beginning from 2000, and I joined it then, I think it was April 2000. And yeah, it was quite of an interesting time, of course. You had a dot-com startup thing around 2099, 2000 in Europe, and it was already crashed in the States at that time. And I'm responsible at Mercateo for the whole supply side. So for Mercateo suppliers and also Unite suppliers, we come to that later, I think.
Yeah.
And we have an international team to care about all the suppliers. Of course, the main team is in Germany. This is where we come from. And you named some numbers. Those were the numbers from Germany. If you look at the article numbers we have, around Europe, also with our closed platform or network platform, we are about more than 400 million products we have on our platform. And yes, well, that's it, actually.
Well, this is pretty impressive. Maybe you can talk also a little bit about the roadmap you went through. So the road you went through from let's say zero to today. Yeah. So what are, from your perspective, major milestones you achieved, and maybe also some obstacles you needed to overcome to become the successful marketplace as you are today?
Yeah, it was quite a long way. It's 20 years. Not many from that time are still alive. So, how many times do we have? No, just kidding. No. Yes. Well, we started in 2000 also already as a B2B platform. We always have been a B2B platform, and we concentrated only on B2B. And we didn't change it at any time, and we won't change it in the future. But when we started, we had not that marketplace we have it right now. So we had different B2B relevant areas. We had that product selling platform, of course, we have right now. Then we had RFQs, we had notice boards, and we had a B2B relevant informations. We had partner for that, but so all around, which is good for B2B customers, and we concentrate on small and medium-sized customers at that time. And okay, then when the one of the first things was, of course, the crash in 2000, the startup crash. And well, we came through this with a partner at that time, which was E.ON, that energy company, I think well known in each country. And then we had a management buyout at the end of 2003, and we get in some venture capitalists. So at that time, it was the beginning of 2004, there was money for that.
Yeah.
For 2-3 years, the money was all gone because of the crash, of course. And I think one really interesting thing is in 2000, we started with Google Marketing.
Yeah.
And we had our shop with, I think it was three main product categories. It was hard and software, office products, and office supplies and office equipment. And yes, and then at that time we started Google Marketing. I think we were the first one who did it in a professional way in Germany. There are a lot of funny stories about that when we started Google Marketing, and then something went wrong. At that time, Google was 10 people in Germany in Hamburg.
Okay.
And then you called the office in Hamburg and they said, well, we can't do anything. You have to wait until the sun rises in California. And the business day was gone at that day. And it really worked from the beginning. And so we did Google advertising and search engine optimization. And this was the basis for our growth in the last decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really just growed with Google. And when we made that management buyout at the end of 2003, beginning 2004, we just concentrate on our marketplace, on that product relevant category. So no RFQs, notice boards, and everything. We during that time, we also had different business units. Like we had e-commerce solutions, mainly for E.ON.
Yeah. Looking at your start, people always, when they talk about platforms, want to learn about how can I solve the chicken and egg problem. So because I need a lot of buyers and sellers on my marketplace to start. And when you look at at Amazon, for example, they started as a one-sided business with selling ebooks to grow their customer base and then they open up into a marketplace. How have you started your marketplace business, and how have you solved the chicken egg problem?
Yes, well, at the beginning we had that full range, like that RFQs and also that marketplace. I think there's no clear definition. We say it's a marketplace, but what really is a marketplace? What is a platform, network, and everything? I think we come to that later. But we now say it's a marketplace. At the beginning, it was more a shop because we had one supplier per category. And they did drop shipment with our delivery node. And for the customers, we were the retailer. This is what we still are, but our understanding is more a marketplace, or becomes a marketplace, because now in Germany we have about 700 suppliers, and also more suppliers for one product.
Mm-hmm.
But what they all do is drop shipment and Mercateo delivery node. So if it comes to the customer, he sees, well, the retailer actually is Mercateo. This is not our self-understanding, but we are legally a retailer at that moment. But so we didn't have that problem to the chicken egg thing. Well, we had not on the supply side. We had some because it was 2000. Everybody says, okay, it's something new. Let's try it. So we had really good suppliers at that time say, okay, we will invest in that and see what happens. And it happened nothing in 2000 and 2001. Yeah. So the chicken egg thing was, okay, we had the idea of the suppliers and our idea, but we didn't have the customers. And we start to begin to get the customer with Google.
Yeah.
But you only had the chance from beginning 2000 because before there were no AdWords.
Yeah.
Nobody, well, Google was quite well known at that moment, but nobody thought about product search.
Actually, yeah. It's very interesting that you're mentioning that legally you're, so I'm jumping to a kind of another topic now, which is governance. You mentioned that legally you are a retailer. How do you handle responsibility and trust and governance over all of the quality of the service that you're rendering, but also the products maybe?
Yes. Yes. So we decide who becomes our supplier. So who comes on Mercateo? There's no self-service. So not every retailer from the market can get on the platform. Yeah. Well, there's a formula. You can ask us, I want to become the supplier from Mercateo, and we will decide, well, is he good enough for our process? Is he good enough for our customers? Has he relevant products and the right products, of course? Are they legally correct? This is what we, of course, all prove. Yes, so we decide, and it's not open. So in several categories, they are, well, it's not close. We have a good assortment. We have good supplies, and we don't need more. Mm-hmm. And this comes, we come later to that. So this is, we are the intermediary in that case. So we decide the rules. This is like Amazon, who is the vendor of Amazon, and also Amazon decides who becomes on the marketplace. Mm-hmm. They are also intermediary. So like we are at Mercateo, we have several suppliers, but we can decide who we want to have on the platform. eBay, Amazon, okay, Rakuten, just gone. Yeah. actually, they also decide, but at the first, you can just self-onboard yourself. And afterwards, they decide if you don't act correct, they remove you from the platform. But this is, we don't have that. We decide before.
And that's from the supplier side to the demand side. And the other way around, do you also take some responsibility maybe for the payments, making sure that the customers yes. actually pay the products that are being bought?
Yeah, yes, we have the risk management. We have an own customer service. At the beginning, it started, I think, at 7 and to 8 p.m. So which you can reach as a customer personally, and now we have the business times. It's starting at 8 to I think 6 p.m. So we do all we do everything a retailer does, all the processes, but not logistics. Mm-hmm. So the returns go directly to the supplier. Yeah, we have contracts for all of that, and of course it's very interesting for the customer because the smaller ones, they just have one stop shop, and the other ones, they say, okay, I have a lot of products in one process, one creditor, mm-hmm. Maybe one interface. And what we did from the beginning when we started to raise the assortment on the platform. Yeah, we had three product categories. I don't know how many it's now. We almost have everything: tools, car parts, parts for laboratory,
So you mentioned that, it sounds like that in a B2B business, this kind of service and curation of suppliers, curation of products, and the service you provide to your customers is absolutely necessary to build up a successful marketplace.
Yes, in the way we did, I think from the beginning. This is what we know afterwards, of course. Yeah, and but what we did is we concentrated on the long tail. So if you have the curve of the indirect spend, yeah, if you look at the left side, you have that high volume, and with a few suppliers, and then you have a large amount of products which you need only once a year. And so you have millions of products with very, very low revenue. Yeah. So this is what we concentrate on. We say we have all the products in one process, You need only one creditor. You get everything. You don't get the best price. We have no individual pricing. So everybody pays the same price. Like we have one of our larger customers, RWE. And they say maybe they have, or we have customers with 100 orders a day in the long tail. They say pay the same price than a lorry who purchases once a year.
Yeah.
So this is what we concentrated on, the long tail.
So this sounds that the customers are more focusing on not on the lowest price, but on the convenience. So if they have a convenient procurement process and it helps them to save time or manual effort, whatever, this is more valuable than really saving 1, 2, 3 cents or euro per product.
Mm-hmm. And secure, I suppose.
Yes.
Convenience and
yes.
Security.
So, it's not only convenient for the smaller one, but the main thing is, and this is what we concentrated on, is the professional purchasing departments, and they are looking on the processing costs.
Yeah.
So they have contract suppliers, and this is what we believe in B2B, by the way, is that you have strong relation, one-to-one relationships, which is regarding, of course, prices, individual pricing, services and consulting, product advices. This is what you have in B2B. Maybe product advice is also B2C, but it's not in that number because you have a large number of products you don't have in B2C, car parts.
Yeah.
So and also tools. There's a large amount of tools you don't need at home. So and then very special ones. So this is what we believe is that you have that one-to-one relationships, and this is why we have when we come to Unite is that we manage those one-to-one connections, and at the end we have the long tail nobody wants to care about. So the large number for this is like if you see larger companies, and they have a market, say the DAX 30s, yeah. They maybe have indirect spend regarding catalog articles, not services. There's also cleaning services, also indirect spend, but regarding catalog articles. So they have maybe around 100 contract suppliers. Within their SAP, they have more than 2,000 suppliers where they have that one purchasing, that spot buy, what you call spot buy. You purchase it once a year.
Yeah.
It's pink copy paper. Well, when do you need this? Maybe once a year. And so for this, you need a supplier. You have a creditor, you have an invoice, and you all get this with paper. You have to manage the creditor manual in your SAP. And this is what Mercateo stands for. This is Mercateo said, this is large amount suppliers, one creditor, and you know what you want. Don't ask for the price, no product advice, pink copy paper. You get it, and you get it with an interface to SAP. And without that, you have processing costs about around 100 euros. And now it's far away from 10. So it's maybe 5, 6, 7 euros. The processing costs. So you don't have to look at the price of pink copy paper if it's 5 euros 50 or if it's 15 euros 50. So this is what we believe in. This is Mercateo, the tail end spend, and on the other side you have that one-to-one connections.
So when we look at the market, what we also see that maybe the biggest well-known marketplace here in Europe is Amazon. And mm-hmm. they are also well-known about their service they provide to their customers. Of course, also the big variety of the portfolio of products, etc. So, and they are now entering also this B2B area, I mean, this B2B field. Mm-hmm. So how do you see Mercateo positioned against mm-hmm. this Amazon B2B business and entering this? So you are there for 20 years, but Amazon is a strong brand, a strong name, also a lot of experience, also with together with their logistics they are building up. So how do you see yourself positioned against them?
Mm-hmm. And if I can complement the question also, you know, how do you see your USP against players like Metro, who are more coming not from the digital side, but more from the supplier side, and who are getting digitalized?
It's kind of both
kind of competitors.
Well, what I think is Amazon business, they come out of their thinking from where Amazon comes from. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they focus, of course, of the customer, but what they do is they focus only the customer. Actually, they don't focus on the supply side. And this is what they seem to do also in Amazon business. Yes, they come really from more from it's convenient. It's, as you know, as a private person, it will be for you in Amazon business. And of course, they start with interfaces and everything, but this is where they start only with the really large companies, what we see at the moment, some medium-sized companies too. But what they think is they still want to be the intermediary. So this is where we, of course, in a competitive position with the Amazon Marketplace, with our Mercateo. And this is why we concentrate on Unite and design it as a network and not as a marketplace. So as a network, you have to look at both sides, supply side and customer side. It's not well balanced because it's the internet, it's transparency. It's not what all the suppliers like. They really enjoy to take the time machine back into the 90s, but they accept it in 2020. Well, it will not go. So the internet, we still will have the internet for the next years. And so, but it's maybe it's not totally balanced, but you have to look at it. You cannot focus in the network. The network will only works if there are a lot of users on both sides, especially a B2B network. And if you only focus on the customers like Amazon does, or also eBay, then it won't work with the network. So you won't come into scaling network processes. There won't be a supplier who says, his customers, please buy my articles on Amazon business. What Amazon is for the suppliers, it's and like Mercateo, the marketplace, it's in sales channel. Mm-hmm. Yes, you get revenue, but not with your customers. It's the customer of the platform, of the marketplace. And they decide the change of the rules, and they change the rules. And it's not your customer. You can almost cannot influence if he buys once a product at your marketplace shop, that he did it the next time too, because you don't know how is the search engine, how does the search engine work. So you have to do Amazon search engine marketing at the end. But you cannot influence it. And the intermediary is the customer of the marketplace. Also at Mercateo, it's our customer. We decide what happens with the customer. We decide how is our search result looking like. We decide what data do you have to bring, but Unite as a network, you have to look, well, what's good for both sides. And
you mentioned multiple times now this Mercateo Unite. So maybe you can give the listeners of this podcast a quick intro and overview. What is Mercateo, let's say, marketplace and Mercateo Unite? Because I think it's not 100% clear for the listeners right now. So
we designed it as a really neutral infrastructure or platform just to digitize the transactions between customers and suppliers, and that in a really easy way. So really, to keep it simple, to do it like a click. So like when we connect, well, it's not really B2B network, but it's a network like LinkedIn or Xing. So I connect you via Xing or LinkedIn, and you see, well, this is Lars connecting me. I see him. Yes, I know him. And then I say, okay. And then I can see your telephone number or whatever, communication data. And this is what our thinking is Unite. The customer says, well, I want to buy the products or get connected to this supplier. Actually, I know this supplier. So, and then I ask him to connect via Unite, and he sees, oh, well, this is a customer for me, or it's a new customer. And I say, well, this is, oh, that's okay. And you can get connected. So I confirm the question, and then he can see the products and the prices. Well, I can do this also as a supplier automatically, so that he can directly get connected to me and see the products and the prices. But I can also say, no, I first want to confirm it, because with B2B you say, well, no, that's not my target group. I don't want to buy this. And then it's designed as the network, and that's a network idea that we motivate the customers to bring the suppliers on the platform. This is what they all already did in with classic e-procurement platforms. I decide which is my purchasing platform, and I tell you as my contract supplier, come on this platform. And you, and as a supplier, you say, whoa, it's Deutsche Bahn. Mm-hmm. Okay, I will go on that platform. Otherwise, indirect spend, there are many other suppliers you can purchase with the same service and same prices. So you will go on the platform. So motivation comes. But if it's not an A or B customer for you on the supply side, and he says, go on that platform, and the supplier says, well, that's too much effort for me, I won't go on that platform, you can buy the products at another place. So
this Unite plays a critical role for you as an infrastructure, where you say you have on the one on one layer the marketplace, where the people can purchase the product and see the portfolio of products. And then on an infrastructure layer, you help them to connect easily, so to connect also the systems, so that they can, using maybe their SAP system or whatever their existing IT infrastructure, to easily connect to your Mercateo marketplace and upload maybe product informations or directly order from the marketplace.
Yeah, order from the marketplace. And also you can get connected, because Unite and the marketplace it's just connected. You can get, as a Mercateo customer, if you're not lucky with the prices or services we can deliver, so we cannot deliver this product in one day, maybe you can choose your supplier, and you decide, well, I want you on the platform. And this is easy. If you have an interface to Mercateo, it's just per click, you get the supplier in your own view, and the process is directly digitized. So In your SAP, you put the product in the basket, you export the basket in SAP, you say order, it goes back, and we forward this to the supplier. And
So it's a kind of plug and play infrastructure.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, you can say it. Yeah. It's really just get connected like a click, with a click. And on the other side, maybe just one second, actually, that's not unusual that the customer says, I use this platform, go on that platform. Yeah. And it's quite easy for the larger suppliers you have. But if you have a supplier, we say you may only a few, not a few euros, but maybe a few thousand euros a year, the supplier says, no, I won't join this platform. It's too much effort for me. Yeah. You have to make more than 10,000 euro revenue with me, because the effort is, say, 5,000 euros for me to get connected to that platform. And so you have, between the contract suppliers and the tail end spend, there's a large amount of suppliers. You have a one-to-one connection, but it's not easy to manage it in a digital way, because you need interfaces, and they will cost a bit. So you don't make interfaces with 2,000 creditors in your system. But if you have relevant suppliers, you say, okay, I choose this one, and one click, I have them in my digitized process. So, and this is that easy that we can also motivate the suppliers to bring their customers. So we have suppliers there. You have a customer says, okay, I want to have an interface with you, or some B2B relevant purchasing features, like multi-user or something, and he does not have it in his shop. And you say, can you do it via Unite? You have every feature, you have a interface, just click my name or my logo, and then you have my product data within your system.
And so this is also what we see. Yeah, Natalie.
Sorry, Matthias. Yes, I think it's very interesting how you've illustrated the importance of balancing the value for both purchasers and suppliers. In fact, we always say that, you know, we're talking about an ecosystem. So if one part of the ecosystem isn't finding value, then they will leave the ecosystem, and then, you know, the whole ecosystem falls down. And there's another party which I've seen on your website you haven't mentioned yet, but I'd like to ask you about. It's the partners. So often, you know, there's different roles in the platform. There's the user or the purchaser in this case, the supplier, and then the partners who add value to the platform or to the users or to the producers, whoever. Can you just say a few words maybe on what how you see the role of those partners?
Well, in the main meaning of our partners, or at the moment we focus on, are different e-procurement systems. We have our own. So the Mercateo marketplace has also e-procurement functionalities. So RWE uses this, and some other large amounts and a lot of medium-sized companies. And but of course, there are a large amount of e-procurement systems in the market. We are in the competition with them, but that's the normal thing. But we to those e-procurement systems, they have no solutions for the tail end spend, for that spot market thing. They only have a solution for the contract suppliers, which are only a few. Larger companies, it's about 100. Medium-sized, it's 5 to 50 maybe. Yeah, depends on, well, medium-sized companies in Germany, it's a really wide range from 500 employees to 5,000 or even larger. If you ask Miele, it's family-owned company. They say, we are a medium-sized company. They have 17,000 employees. By the way, also a customer of Mercateo. And we don't see them in that way as a competitor. So we have that tail end spend, and also not only the really tail end, which is Mercateo and or Amazon. They are e-procurement system. They have connection to Amazon Business, of course. But you have the contract suppliers, you have the tail end spend, and in between there's a large amount interesting suppliers you want to have one-to-one connection, but the effort on both sides is too high to get it digitized. So you can, we have an API to the e-procurement, say SAP Ariba, Binearing, and Integra. At the moment, we have contracts with a lot more. We have to on both sides to make it happen that it works for the customers. And so the contract suppliers are within SAP Ariba. And then they have a connection to Unite. The Ariba customer can say, okay, I want to have the products from this supplier, also from the Mercateo marketplace, pink copy paper. And then they get it in their SAP Ariba, in their look and feel. And so this is where we say, well, the network can use the customer wherever he is. And if he uses Mercateo as a procurement system, he also can take part for at the Unite network. And if he uses SAP Ariba, Binearing, whatever, if they have an API to Mercateo, that you can also use the network. So this is where we are totally open.
And you also mentioned at the beginning about network effects, and this is something which is really, really important for platforms to scale. How have you unlocked network effects on your platform, and how do you see, how do you kind of nurture them today? So what are the kind of mechanics you have in place to really nurture those kind of network effects, put them in place and make them grow? Yeah.
Well, it's, we are at the beginning. We have them and we have good numbers, so that we say it's fine for the beginning, but to start it, this is what we see is B2B is a bit slower than B2C. Yeah. So it was a hard way to go, and we are on a good way. We have good feedback from the market. We have that networks effect that we have suppliers who bring the customers on Unite, different motivations. Some do to manage their C customers. I still want to be connected to my C customers, of course, but in an easy way. So they say, C customers, please go to Mercateo, use my what we call business shop. So on Unite, you have your own shop in shop. It's like a marketplace shop on eBay or on Amazon. It's maybe a bit more yeah, you see who is the supplier, you see the logo, contact data, which what is the special thing of the supplier. And so of course we have on the customer side, they invite via Unite the suppliers and different things. We have on the supply side, we have some suppliers they don't have in shop. It's smaller or medium-sized manufacturers for spare parts. And they link on their website to say, my shop is a business shop on Unite. So they bring their customers to Unite. We trained sales teams from our suppliers who say, okay, if there are special points on the customer side we cannot solve, but maybe Unite can, then say, give him the link to our business shop that he get connected via Unite to us. So, and he can also invite via Unite, send the customer link. Here is the link to my business shop. And this is what happens at the moment. So we get those customers from the suppliers, not in that amount that we really want to. Because it's for many suppliers, it's a high hurdle. Yeah, to tell their own employees to bring their customers on another platform.
And why is this the case? So I understood is that you created this Mercateo Unite as a plug and play infrastructure so they can easily connect. At the end, it will ensure that the process costs are lower so that the seller has a big advantage to use your shop. They have this reach to the customer base, etc. And at the same time, they save a lot of money or save on the process costs, and that's their main benefit and reason maybe also to convince more and more customers to join Mercateo, because at the end it will help them to save more and more process costs.
So yet it's not on the supply side, it's not mainly the process costs. It's on the main thing on the customer side is the process costs, not on the supply side. Say if they have a good shop, then they can, and I also can do in SAP integration or via OCI or whatever. It's at least it's the same processing costs by Unite as its own shop. Most of them don't have that possibility to do this. And that's the main thing. They are not able, the largest suppliers in the market, they can do everything in digitalization with the customers because they are forced via Siemens, Volkswagen, whatever. They forced him to do everything in a digitalized way, but not the smaller ones. So they can perform on the other side, product advice services in the same way as the larger suppliers, but they don't have digitalization competence. So this is where they can go to the customer and say, if you want digitized processes, I cannot do this for you, but I have a solution and this is a platform.
So then at the end, you are not only a kind of a marketplace and shop, whatever, but also a kind of a, we help you small sellers to digitally transform your business. And we help you to do this in a very efficient and maybe cheaper way than if you would invest a lot of money by yourself.
Yes. Yes. And of course, the market pressure is to use platforms. To use a platform where you have several suppliers, several products, and actually it's not only products, it comes with the suppliers, but several suppliers. It's a multi-supplier platform. This is a clear trend in B2B on the customer side, and this is what you cannot solve with your own shop anyway. So, but if you, in B2B, if a customer, if you have a good connection, maybe you say, okay, I won't purchase at your shop anymore because you don't have those processes, B2B purchasing features like multi-user, whatever. I will go to Amazon Business. This is actually what the normal customer does not say. They are still gone. They're just gone. So you have the suppliers have to change their mind to find out more from the customers, not that they are buying tools, that they give them product advice to buy the right tool, but how does he purchase tomorrow? And then I have to say, okay, tomorrow the way is you want to use a platform. Maybe if you use Mercateo Unite, it's better for me than Amazon Business. If you use Amazon Business, so I try him to use the best platform for me as a supplier. Yeah. And this is why he motivated to bring the customer to Unite. I don't know any supplier who is motivated to bring his own customers to Amazon Business or eBay or whatever platform. Because this is what I mean with the balance. He has the same process, at least the same processing cost. For many, it's maybe cheaper to use Unite also for the process. He has a neutral platform. Yes, we have on the Mercateo marketplace, which is inherent Unite, of course. We sell probably the same products, but at a quite high level in B2B. We are not the cheapest, far away from the cheapest. This is what you never want to be when you're talking about tail end spend. You cannot be the cheapest with 24 million products. So so this is what I think the main is. Of course, it's neutral. We are neutral. It's trust. We have really a good. They have a personal contact with Mercateo Unite people in my team, and I think that's one of the main things. But it's still a hurdle for them, of course.
Yeah.
The most medium sized to bring a customer, it's his own customer, to another platform. Even if you say, well, it's a better platform than Amazon Business or whatever platform. Yeah. I don't want to bash too much to Amazon, but and this is what we say Unite for him is it's in sales instrument. It's not a sales channel. You can use Amazon Business. They bring the customer, like Mercateo Marketplace. It's just revenue. It's nice, yeah. And you say, well, it's worth 50%, 15%, maybe, yeah. So to bring your own customer on, you don't bring your customer in that sales channel. You have to use it as a sales instrument, integrated to your sales strategy. Yeah, because my sales team has to know how more about the customer in the near future. They have to find out.
Yeah, this is exactly so. In B2B business, it's all about trust and building relationships. And I have this relationship built over the time. And now if I convince them to go to a marketplace there, so maybe I lose this relationship, etc. So it looks like that your sales team, so Mercateo sales team, or the customer team, when they talk to those suppliers, they have to do a very, very good job to kind of convince him and work together with them to say, hey, this brings to you a clear advantage instead of losing a deep relationship they have built over the time. So
yeah, it's a hard job at the moment. in the most cases.
And it seems that this trust element is very important, and maybe even more, because if the suppliers or the customers are influencing the other party to come onto the platform, there's also some kind of responsibility that they are taking to onboard or push their counterparts to join the platform. And so the same question as I asked you about the marketplace, maybe on Unite, how do you handle this whole what I call governance, but within governance I put trust and responsibility and this whole topic of trust and responsibility?
Yeah, I think it helps us that we are on the market for 20 years now. We have to several suppliers really long relationships. On, of course, Mercateo comes from Mercateo, and a large number of suppliers are also on Unite, because they say, well, what you do, we have a good feeling. If we try it with you, it's not a network from the beginning, of course. It's a chicken egg thing. But we will try it because we trust you. And this is, we trust, we have good connections. It's a five-person tools retailer in, near Berlin. And we are also in good connections with Konrad, who has his own, tries to establish his own B2B marketplace, by the way. We have no problem with that. Yeah, it's more a vertical and not really horizontal, but so from really smaller ones to the really big ones. Yeah. And this is for years, but we still, of course, when we come to new suppliers who heard of Mercateo, and then they say, well, you sell the same products, you must be evil. Well, it takes a bit more discussion to tell them what is it about Unite. It's for the existence connections, it's not the problem. But this is what we see, is the more and more users on the customer side we have, of course, the supplier look more on the platform, what does that do? I have to deal with this. And if you look at Mercateo, where we sell the products, we have certain manufacturers. If you go to the product detail page, where you can buy the product from Mercateo, you will see in that article description. So if you are a power user of this manufacturer, so you need services, product advices, maybe you purchase more than only one piece, you need individual conditions, you can just sign up here and get connected directly to the manufacturer or retailer of the manufacturer. Depends on how the manufacturer deals in the market. So some go direct to the customer, many not. So this is what we do on our Mercateo platform. I think this is really trustful too. We say we have Mercateo customers, but we want them to be in the network. Of course, we have that red cross on our shirt, but because we get a stickiness to the platform, of course. If they find their suppliers on our platform managed in a good way, they won't change the platform. They won't pay. They won't buy pink copy paper at any other place, because we don't care about pink copy paper. But we have not only our contract suppliers, but all the other relevant ones we have now in the digitized process. And this is what more and more suppliers see, but still a hard way to go. But we see that the network is growing. We see that the suppliers bring their customers. And of course, the customers, vice versa. That's what we have on other platforms too, of course, that you say, well, but that's what we see also is that, that some customers say they cannot bring the suppliers on that platform because the purchasing volume is too low. And then they say, well, go to Unite, then you have other customers too. And if I have it on Unite, then I bring. And this is what we call the customer pings the supplier. And then we go to the supplier. Well, this customer wants you on the platform. And then you see that the supplier says, well, this is too small one still for you, Unite. I won't get on Unite. And then you get the second ping from another customer. It was just a couple of weeks ago. And then the supplier said, well, that's the second customer. Maybe there comes the third, fourth, fifth one. Okay, I will go on the platform.
This is principle of cross-site network effects. On the one hand side, the sellers are acquiring the customers, but on the other side, also the customer acquires the sellers. A lot of great insights you gave, a lot of points we touched about how to build up a successful business, and as you also mentioned, over the time you have to build up trust, and it's especially in B2B. But our podcast is also called Platforms for Future. So we also want to talk about sustainability. Yeah. And we hear this all over the place, as maybe more before COVID-19 happened. But there's a huge debate and a huge movement in the world right now to fight against those climate change and to focus on CO2 neutrality, etc. How does it also play a role in your B2B marketplace business right now?
Yeah, of course, this topic becomes more and more relevant. And we see it from especially public customers and larger companies. Mm-hmm. On Mercateo, we started with special search filters, like special criteria, FSC certification, which is an industry standard. But in Germany, we have that Blauer Engel. I don't know. It's not international. I think it's a special label. For sustainable products, and what we plan to do is not only on Mercateo but on Unite, that the customer can choose, that he can make filters, that he can say, okay, I don't just want to have suppliers with this criteria. They are FSC certificate. They are they signed a corporate social responsibility contract, whatever. I think the problem at the moment is are the certain criteria. Well, first you had that corporate social responsibility. Now you have that environmental and social governance, ESG, becomes more and more a relevant topic. And that's really good. But what are really the defined criteria? So if we have, and then we have a special role as a platform to make it transparent. Platform is, I think, one of the main things is to make it transparent for everybody. So then I can choose the suppliers in a way that I say I have a good feeling because they behave in an ESG-conform way. And, of course, you need the information. You need the relevant product data. You have to motivate the supply side to deliver the relevant product data, and also for the company to make transparency about how they act in the market. So, and that's really, well, I think for the next month, we really do a lot of effort to go in that way. It's a way to go.
So you, when we also had our conversation before the podcast you also mentioned that, yes, that you implemented those filters and labels and give the buyers the choice to pick those products and buy those products which are having a more sustainable supply chain or reduced packaging and whatever. But you mentioned also that currently that the buyers not always use those kind of filters and those things, so that the numbers of products, let's say sustainable products purchased, is still very, very low. So is this true that we need to convince more of those buyers, especially in a B2B environment, to look for sustainable products? So it's not really a high priority for them. So it's still more that low cost and high quality is a higher priority than sustainability for them?
In fact, I believe it. I'm sorry, but in fact, I believe that's the main thing at the moment. And the others, yes, they want the lowest price, but with sustainable products. And they more and more do. We have one larger customer. He said to us at the end of 2000, I think it was 2020, I do not want to have any delivery with plastic. Is that really better? Is it better to get a packaged item with plastic, which goes directly from the manufacturer to the customer, or it goes through the whole logistic hubs via Germany without plastic, but 1,000 kilometers more to the customer? So this is, the life cycle assessment is a really, really complex thing, I think. So what we can do as a platform is to make it as transparent as we can. And this is what we need good for. On product side, on product level, we need a good information, which is not that easy to get from. I think there are a lot of products and more come into the market, which are sustainable. But, well, as we can see what comes on the larger private marketplaces from Far East, I don't really believe that they really do care about on the product level, maybe. And but this is as a platform, we see we have to make it transparent. We see there are coming more and more products, and the customer, well, they purchase this, they try to, of course, yeah. Then you have to make that they can find them. And but also that ESG is not only a product thing. It's how does the supplier act or the company acts actually? Yeah, how is the whole behavior of the company? Is it an environmental and social? The social thing also is a really important thing. And this is difficult to make it transparent. You need the information from the companies but also the criteria, and they are not really clear.
How do you actually maybe use the data layer or do you use the data layer of your platform to make all these quite different types of informations, because you mentioned different ways of measuring sustainability? How, you know, can you make this more digestible, understandable from the for the buyer, or is that still too far away?
Well, I think not too far away. We work on this. We but it's just in process to find out what is the right thing. What does really the customer side wants? What really can the supply side deliver? And then to bring it together. And this is, well, yeah, maybe it's just, evaluation at the moment. I think it's not technically that complex. It's more motivation on the supply side to bring the data and then the customer that they really use this to make, to bring them in the use, they really click on, I only want suppliers who are an ESG ready or whatever. Then you need the criteria. Of course, all other suppliers and also in the network, they have to sign a code of conduct. Yeah. So it's, yes, this is what we do. I think not the other platforms don't, but that's just the beginning.
What I also think is, on the one hand side, you talk about transparency. So you can give as much as possible transparency about the products itself, et cetera, to the customers and enable them to make the right choice. On the other side, we also, when we talk about platforms in the economy, we talk about responsibility of those platforms. So for example, what is the responsibility of Facebook, of what kind of information they display, et cetera. So do you see also something similar for you as Mercateo to say, we as Mercateo, with our strong position in the market, we have also a responsibility, or we see a responsibility for ourselves to drive this sustainability movement, and maybe to say, we want to ensure that maybe half of the portfolio of products we have listed on our marketplace will be sustainable products until 2025 like that.
It sounds good. I think the reality is different because we as a platform cannot really decide, is there a product worldwide in the market? Yeah, like a hammer. Yeah, just a hammer who is more sustainable than the other one. So we cannot decide it. There must be different, like a label, like Blauer Engel. If there is, then we say, okay, we maybe highlight the Blauer Engel hammer, but we on our own, on our platform, cannot decide which is more sustainable than the other one. Is the wood for the hammer you have your hand, has it an FSC certificate? Has it more value for the customer than the Blauer Engel? So we can only make it transparent. And okay, what we should do and what we will do is to make it not only transparent, but to bring it to the market, of course, to motivate the supply side to deliver this and say, okay, the customer wants this, because we have it not on you don't need 5 clicks to get to sustainable products. Yeah. To make it transparent in a prominent way so that you can say the first choice should be. Yeah. This is what we then have to think about.
This means that you really want to combine this transparency and the neutrality of your platform. Those things you want to become, or you will stay as a neutral platform in the market. So the only way to stay neutral means to increase transparency and give the customers the choice.
Yeah, give the customer choice. And of course, it's a topic. Yeah, we can say, okay, we evaluate in 2 years. Yeah, we start to evaluate it now. And even though there is not the whole market wants that, it's now it's a few customers, but we know it becomes more. But it could be easy for us to say, well, okay, we deal with it next year or in 2 years. So this is why we focus it right now, but it's not really easy, because what we cannot do, as I said before, is to say which is the most sustainable product, which is the most sustainable supplier. Yeah. Because the market is, if you say you have that ESG as environmental and social governance, it's a wide topic. It's not what you concrete say you have to do this, and you have 5 criterias, and if you have the 5 fine with 5 criterias, it's a better supplier with those 4 criterias. They are not clear at the moment. Yeah. So you have some also certifications, and this is what we can from the beginning make transparent. And that's a challenge, of course, for I think probably next 1 or 2 years. And then motivate, of course, more motivation on the supply side and then to generate the right pressure from the market side. And this is what I mean, make it transparent, not only on 5 clicks to use on the platform. And we say, we have it. If you want, you have it. You cannot find it, but we have it. To make it, of course, transparent right from the beginning to the market. Yeah.
I think what I'm hearing also is that because there are so many stakeholders and that you, you know, to make this successful, you need to make sure that all the stakeholders are happy and finding value. And then you need to orchestrate those connections and those behaviors. It seems that the only way to go is really not to have a, you know, a fixed image and a fixed roadmap, but rather, you know, a goal maybe, but you iterate and you test things and you adjust a little bit more. And you, this is what I'm hearing from the beginning of your story, now on the sustainability topic also. You know, it's a more of a, you know, testing and trying to see how the all parties react to the little adjustments that you make until you find the right one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think this is what you, in our business, what you have to do. Because innovation, it comes not from us, the customers, and then act like the customer wants. I think then we're probably back in the holes. But we say, I don't need a roof above my head. Yeah. So, or if you see that roller skates and roller blades, if you have the roller skates, and if you came to the market and said, well, do you want roller blades with the four in one row? Everybody said, are you crazy? So innovation, I think, is in you have to try and find out. And also with the platform business, some things are quite clear, and you have, especially B2B, it just needs time, and you strong belief, of course, in what you do. And but in that, it's not the main focus. It's a focus, of course, it's sustainability. And we want to come to this quite early. But if you do something, the market from the customer side, and you see on the product level, there are more and more sustainable products. But the whole behavior of the economy in this direction, it's just a long way. And we can try to do our part to make it maybe faster. And I think transparency is one of the main things. And also probably act ourselves more and more in that way, of course, as a company too. And I still believe transparency is one of the main thing, and then motivation, of course. And maybe to push, you say, well, the highlighted suppliers are on the first page, or the other one you have really to look for.
And you're right about innovation, and here you're innovating on the business model rather than on the product, like you were illustrating with the rollerblades. Yes. And I think on those platform business models, it's really a business model disruption or innovation in the model. And I think that's why platforms have to go through this kind of testing. Yeah. And the neutrality and trust position, I think, is really fundamental. Also, when you look at other platforms, like old platforms, if I can say it like that, those who have been on the market that we know, more on B2C markets, I think they discovered afterwards that trust was a core element, and they're trying to back engineer it into the model. Whereas it seems that you've, you know, understood this and you're kind of really building on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think B2B trust comes first. So this is how did act really I'm within Mercateo for 20 years, and right from the beginning, trust was always, I can really stand for that we had really a trustful relationship on both sides, on the customer side and also supply side. And on the supply side, maybe it's not that usual.
I think this is a very good kind of a final statement. So I think we went through an amazing story here, and he talked about chicken and egg problem, how he solved it at the beginning of your journey. You talked about Mercateo Unite as a plug and play infrastructure and how it enables also this network effects, cross-site network effects, that you also see that the sellers attracting buyers and the buyers attracting the sellers. So it's really good. And at the end, also about trust as a still as a also for B2B marketplaces or B2B platforms is still the most important thing to build up a sustainable business. And you'd also talked about sustainability and what you do to ensure that the customers really have the right choice for the sustainable products. So it was a really an amazing conversation with you. Maybe as a kind of a closing question to you, you are one of the CEOs of this group and you are a business leader and executive. What would be your advice to other of those executives and business leaders? How could they successfully transform their business into a more sustainable, profitable business or maybe a platform business?
Yes, what I really clearly see is when what we see in the market on, okay, I have more view in the supply side, of course, but sometimes also to the customer side and of course, listen to our sales team is that, well, platform business is the future. This is not only because we do this, we believe in this, so we must say that. That's quite clear. But what I see is that on both sides of the market, a lot of companies do not have a clear platform strategy. They use it in some way, but not with a strategy. Well, yeah, I try Amazon Business. I maybe try eBay. Well, I try Mercateo or Unite, but not with a clear strategy. And that's the key point. What they need is, and this is really difficult to tell also the medium-sized companies, yeah, on both sides, supplier and customer, to say you need a strategy, you need persons who help you. If you don't have it within your company, which is quite complex to get the right people, not to Berlin maybe, not to Cologne maybe, not to Leipzig, but wherever you are seated, it's not easy to get the right people, then maybe consultancy is a nice thing, yeah, to find your strategy. I think the strategy is one of the key points that a lot of companies have no strategy. And this is fine maybe for the moment, before Corona, of course, everything was fine. Yeah, the economy raises, everybody was lucky. So you don't see that there's something missing really. But I think now it becomes really clear that they will define and find their strategy. I think that's one of the key points for the market.
Yeah, this is absolutely something we can underline here. This is also what we see when we talk to our customers, that a clear platform strategy is missing, and it becomes more visible and more clear right now when the pressure through the supply chain changes based on COVID-19, et cetera, are more visible.
And most of them need help. They need external help. And this is maybe some do not accept this, but they really will need this.
Yeah, Lars. Thank you very, very much to join our conversation here.
Thank you so much. Give us so many insights
about your business. And yeah, we wish you further luck with your and success, of course, with your platform. And looking forward to the next conversations in the next years.
Thank you very, very much. It was very rich, very interesting. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.